This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
He brought back!
The 승선에 들어오는 분들은 통과입니다. 그럼 시작합니다.
무궁화 꽃이 피었습니다.
324번 탈락.
병신 걸렸네.
무궁화 꽃이 피었습니다.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvin. I know that we've been taking a step back on Throwback Tuesday recently. We did warn you because there is just so much stuff to talk about that's new and fresh and in cinemas. And today, we're actually going to be talking about one of the shows that's been taking the world by storm in some ways, and that is Squid Game on Netflix.
So, you know, when you keep hearing something is amazing and everyone's talking about it and you think it's never going to be that great. I'm so glad that Squid Game turned out to be the opposite of that, because by the time I started watching, you know, memes were flying everywhere and people were talking about it and the creepy girl doll voice for the game was everywhere. And I was like, oh, I'm just going to see what this is about. And before I knew it, I was so hooked. I think it's one of those shows that exactly what's on the tin, but it delivers so well that there's so much there to just keep you going.
Did you guys see Alice in Borderland when it was out? Did you guys watch?
No, I didn't.
So I heard a lot about it. And so when I watched the Squid Game trailer, that was actually my first thought, which is why I was glad that it wasn't exactly that, which we can get into later. But yeah, I haven't seen it. I'm aware of it.
So I was reluctant to get into Squid Game because of Alice in Borderland, because it was fairly recent. And the plot is like somewhat similar. If you watch the trailers, they're almost, they're not identical, but you get the gist of it that they're going for the same thing. Of course, Alice in Borderland is a Japanese TV show. But because of that, I wanted to hold back for a while because I was like, it might be the same old thing. And I wasn't that interested. That being said, though, I'm so glad that I checked out Squid Game, because even though it is similar in many ways, but it is also different in a lot of ways in like aesthetics and the way it progresses and stuff. And like you said, it's such a addictive show that you just cannot stop binging it, which is something that I'll come back to later. But yeah, such a fun show in such a bleak and dark way.
So it is written and directed by Hwang Dong-hyuk, and it's something that he'd been developing actually for quite some time with a desire to focus on this idea of class disparity and to write something that would be a parable, really. And the parable takes the form of not just Squid Game, but essentially this sort of like battle royale style contest in which you have 456 contestants, that number is very important, who are taken away to a mysterious location in which they play childhood games. And if they lose, if they try and quit, they are immediately killed. And that is the real twist, I think, of the whole show. That's the moment where you realize like, oh, this is going to get really, really dark. And all of them are essentially in competition for the ultimate prize that results from people dying of 45.6 billion won, because every player is worth 100 million won, the numbers really get to me. But anyway, everybody's life is worth a certain amount. When they die, it goes into the central pool.
So I think the show does several things really well, right? People have talked a lot about how it, as you said, it talks about class disparity. It talks about South Korea's debt crisis. It talks about how they treat their different classes and how, for instance, depending on what background you come from, the kind of access you might have had and then where you end up. There is a lot there. But I think Squid Game is one of those things that strikes a really good balance between being extremely commentary-based, providing some kind of important point about the world we live in and the problems in it, while also balancing that out with just visceral, fun, emotive stories and a plot that just keeps going forward, right? So, and I think that's kind of important because you don't want, for something like this, you don't want to end up with something super arty that only like 50 film nerds around the world want to watch. On the other hand, you go too far in the other direction, and it's just sort of like a big, dark, gory spectacle with nothing at its heart. What I like about Squid Game is that it actually toes that line pretty well.
Also, I think it's kind of important to say that the plot isn't anything new, right? Like, we've seen this plot many, many times. The Hunger Games is somewhat similar. You mentioned Battle Royale, also somewhat similar. And we've seen a few other shows that dabble in the same sort of concept. I just mentioned Alice in Borderland, same thing. But somehow it's able to be fresh and new in terms of the shock value, in terms of how the plot changes from episode to episode and how it progresses from one episode to another. You fall in love with the characters almost immediately. They're so, they're not likable, but they are magnetic. In terms of like being new and something like bold and fresh, I don't think it does anything in that sense. Like, it sticks to the old tropes and templates, but it's able to be fresh in the way it creates the people that you care about on the show.
I really want to talk about the characters, but before that, I did also want to say that one great thing about Squid Game is that it does what it needs to do, which is when it's a show based on games and a show based on survival, you need to be able to put yourself in the game. You need to be able to think to yourself, man, if I were doing a tug of war with an old man and a bunch of skinny people over a large precipice, you know, how would I do in this game? If I had to play, I don't think we call it red light, green light. I think here we call it a number of different names. But the point is,
wolf, I think.
We call it wolf and chickens. And yeah, mother hen, you know, just a variety. Actually, mother hen's a different game, but you get what I mean. You know, if we're playing like wolf or red light, green light, how am I going to do? I mean, I know the answer. I am a mid-table player at best. I definitely would not. I like to think that I would not be the first 150 to go, but there's no real guarantee. Like, I'd make it up till about the 250 era, I think. But anyway, I think that the show does that really well. And a part of that is what you said, Arvind. It's about the characters. It's about we're not all in massive amounts of debt, because we're talking about people with like 6 billion won worth of debt. You know, it's staggering numbers. But I think we all understand the appeal of a lottery. We all understand the push in some ways that desperation can create. And so it's for those reasons that you really get into the story, even if, as you rightly point out, none of the characters are what you would call traditionally likable.
And the show emphasizes the element of choice very, very strongly, right? It's everyone's choice to be there. It's everyone's choice to continue playing. It's everyone's choice to kill or be killed. But on the other hand, it also kind of lays out how, yeah, there's kind of a choice, but really those choices are never as straightforward as they seem. And that's why it becomes so compelling too, because I realized that in every game, I kept thinking to myself, what would I do if I were there? What would I do if I could either push the guy in front of me down and progress or jump off myself so that I can end this misery? And these are not easy choices. I found the game so compelling precisely because you identify with these characters and the situation they're in. I also just wanted to say that because visually everything is so striking, if you haven't seen the memes already, the show, I think, partly also just works because of how weird and great everything looks. You feel like you've been dragged into this world, and for the 1 hour that you're watching each episode, like, you kind of live in it.
Oh, the aesthetics are amazing. The show's like, I mean, what would you call it? Like, the art direction or the set pieces or just the sets themselves, they are so in contrast to what the show is actually doing, which is gory and violent and bloody and bleak.
But everything,
right?
Is like candy colored and childhood inspired.
Even the wardrobe, actually. Like, I've seen articles of like, so you want to dress like a Squid Game contestant? And I'm like, in what nightmare? But the point is that, you know, even that's become a thing.
Yeah. And even the, I mean, not even the color of the stuff or like the architecture per se, but even the color of the show, right? It could have been so easy for the show to be toned in a weird blue or weird like Sophia, like all sort of quote unquote social divide or post-apocalyptic shows are, you know, they always have like a one tone thing going on because they want you to be sad while watching the show, but you're not. It's very easy to feel lighthearted, and almost like happy, you know, looking at all these like
until the blood flows,
and even the blood's kind of like bright in this show. it's very red. But I think the last time we saw a show that was this visually consistent was Loki.
I mean, on the business side of things, Netflix had said clearly that they were looking for the next Stranger Things, right? They were looking for the next big cultural phenomenon, and they were hoping that it would not be Hollywood based. And I think a part of that comes with an expectation of world building to a degree, which is why Squid Game has such a perfectly realized world. I mean, if they wanted to sell creepy dolls with like rotating heads, are they doing that? Anyway, if they wanted to do that, they could. and that says something about how evocative I think the games as well as the settings actually are. We're talking today about Squid Game. I feel like it almost needs no introduction. We're fairly late to it because we wanted to make sure that we'd watched it, a bunch of people, you know, everyone's watched it. We can talk about it safely. But yeah, let us know. I mean, have you watched Squid Game? Did you like it? Did you not? WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
Everybody, you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn Shamila and Arvin, and today we are reviewing Squid Game, which dropped more or less a month ago now on Netflix and has since really been kind of a cultural phenomenon. And we touched earlier on the characters. I thought we could return there because, look, let's face it, out of 456 people, about 448 or something are extras. You know, they're there to die in really horrific ways or to play games very poorly. But the main set of characters, you know, your primary and then your secondary characters are really compelling. And actually, even as you watch it, I think for most of us, we'll watch it knowing that we're probably only getting about half of the cultural context of these characters because we're not Korean and therefore we don't necessarily recognize, maybe their accents or the way they carry themselves. But I thought the characterization was very vivid. You get to know them quite quickly in a short span of time.
I love the characters. Even the ones that you're supposed to dislike, they are just so compelling and watchable, and you get so invested in them. And actually what you just said, the whole not getting the cultural nuance, I wonder in some ways whether that might be a good thing. I'm not advocating for not understanding context, but these tropes are so unlike the tropes that we're used to from American TV shows. So your lead character is a particular kind of character. Then you have your supporting characters who all play types. And I feel like they're types that if you watch Korean dramas, you might recognize them. But when you're not really coming from that background and you're not so familiar with how these characters play out in these scenarios, it adds a new layer of excitement because you're never quite sure whether you're supposed to warm up to someone. Are you supposed to dislike them? Are they going to turn out to be, you know, evil or murderous? Or should you actually want them to win the game? And so all of that kept things very exciting.
It did. And also, I think for me, the biggest sort of like mental gymnastics that I had to do was going back to just understanding why they would put themselves in the middle of a game like this. And the show does a good job at explaining why they're there. It goes out of its way sometimes to tell you, like, this is why these people are stuck in this situation and why they have to be here, even though they know that people are dying and they could die playing this game. So I don't know so much about like cultural context, but yeah, there was a lot of like mental jumping around for me just to convince myself that this makes sense for these people to be here. Horrific doesn't even begin to explain the kind of scenario that they are stuck in.
They make an argument though for the adrenaline, don't they? I mean, in the sense that there are characters who talk about how dead in some ways their life outside of Squid Game is, and there are scenes which take place outside the confines of the game, which again paint quite a bleak picture of what it is that drives someone to decide, you know what, it's death or 45.6 billion won, and that's fine. That's a chance I'm willing to take. I did want to talk a little bit about the tropes of Korean shows because I think if you are not familiar with a lot of Korean cinema or Korean or K-dramas, and they're actually quite different even in terms of what they present, then I think that there are some things about acting style. There are some things about the way in which characters attack the story, that takes some getting used to, because I think in such an extreme situation as Squid Game, it could have been very easy for everybody to go really extreme with their performances. And I think it's saying something that while, yes, there are outbursts and there are disagreements, there is also a subtlety and a held backness to a lot of the performances that make you realize they really are going through something, but they're also not in your face about, woe is me, play the violins, kick it in now, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, for sure. I think there's a lot of subtlety to these performances and the characters. And the reason we get so attached to these characters is also because in between these big, bloody games where people are going to lose their lives, the show takes a lot of care to build pockets of conversation and pockets of connection. And each of these characters have different scenes in which their conversations with each other, and you never quite know, are they still playing the game or are they being themselves? And I don't know, I think that's part of why I got so attached to some of these characters, to the point where ultimately when they exit the game, I was left sometimes quite bereft.
I wanted to ask though, is this a binge show or is this a show that was meant to be binged? Because I feel like Squid Game lost like an entire aspect or like a whole element of its of the show itself just by being bingeable. And I feel like this is one of those things that had to be like a water cooler topic that had to come out on a weekly drop. So every week you could like either go to work or talk with friends about who do you think is going to die or who do you think is going to exit or who do you think is going to win. And that would have given the show so much more, I don't know what the word is for it, but so much more value in a way. Other than just having people binge on a weekend and then you're not able to talk to the people who haven't seen the show because they're going to watch it the next weekend. And by that time, you've watched like three other shows and you've forgotten about Squid Game.
I agree, you know, actually. I binged it because, you know, that's just what you do these days with these Netflix drops. But I've also really understood the value of the weekly drop with things like Loki and Mandalorian. I like this idea of having to wait a week and letting things marinate. And this show would have been great. You're right. There are moments where the game ends and then you have a whole weekend. For me, even waiting one night because I wanted to go to bed was a lot. So I imagine that if there was a week to talk to people about what happened, the way we used to talk about Game of Thrones, actually would have been great for a show like this.
I have a slightly different take. And that's more to do with the show's afterlife. So in the time since it dropped, we've seen the Instagram filter where you have to try beat the doll. We've seen people teaching you how to make the Dalgona candy, which is a centerpiece of one of the games. We've seen like various think pieces trying to explain the cultural context that Squid Game is coming from, trying to talk about why it is that it pushes the themes that it does, or why it is that they chose this particular color. You know, what is the significance of these things? And so I actually think, while yes, it would probably have benefited from the weekly drop, I think there's something about, if you'll pardon it, the foreignness of Squid Game to a Hollywood audience or to an audience raised on Hollywood that has meant that the afterlife is the weekly drop, if that makes sense. It's a different sort of conversation, but the pop culture cachet of the show, the fact that it has such impact, means that it's still been talked about, but not in the TV watching schedule, if that makes sense.
I mean,
Sorry, I was just going to say it's like we're consuming the experience as much as the show itself.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. It's become like a meme machine, the thing. Like you can't escape the Squid Game memes. And also the fact that it's going to become the most watched show in Netflix history, like on the platform itself, in the history of Netflix, that's insane, right? Mm. Like a non-English show becoming like the biggest show on Netflix, like globally.
I wanted to do two things. I wanted to say something I didn't like and to shout out something that I did. So I'll start on the positive and we can end on a downer, a la Squid Game. So that's not a spoiler. It's, you know, just figure it out. But I wanted to say that Hwang Dong-hyuk, there have been lots of articles coming out about how he lost weight and teeth, apparently, making this show. Like he was so stressed. But I think that a lot of his lived experiences really come through. He's talked before about how he was poor. He lived through like a lot of economic difficulties. And because of that, I think the nuances really came through in the show. And that's an interesting aspect to come at it from. The other thing, however, is speaking of tropes, I need Korean shows to stop doing the white people thing.
Like, oh my God. The white people were so bad. But Bollywood does that too. Just terrible tourists who stand in for actors.
It's a thing. It's a trope. It's like they keep doing this where they'll fly us off to like some obscure European city and then suddenly have a bunch of extras just walking around saying things like, yeah, I know. And I'm like, we can stop, I think.
So I think for me, the accents work. Like the way they spoke was okay. But the things they said didn't make sense. Like I'm like, no living person talks like this. Like no, unless you're like an artificial, like you're AI trying to learn language, then you sound this way. And that's how like all of them sounded. It was so stereotypical in a weirdly offensive way. And I don't know how that works.
It's like how Asians view white people, the terrible stereotype of a white person. That's who materializes on screen.
Just fair warning, there are like 9 episodes, and out of that 9, this set of people play a relatively prominent role in like 3 of them. So in those 3 episodes, every time we flashed back to a certain room with a certain bunch of people, I was like, we're back. So other than that, excellent show. So we've been talking today about Squid Game, and we'd like to know what your impressions of it are. How do you think you would do in the game? Did you like the show? WhatsApp us 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Write to us at movies@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.